I think it's because our overall environment is getting more and more toxic. So these little daily exposures are filling up our barrels, or it's just more than our bodies can deal with. And then something like mold comes along and really tips us over. I really do think it's the latest epidemic in our country to have these big mold exposures.
Welcome to the Beautifully Broken podcast, brought to you by AmpCoil. I'm your host, Freddie Kimmel, and on this show, we discuss the common thread survivors share after walking through the fire, the practitioners making a difference, and the treatment modalities that deliver healing back into the hands of the people who need it most. Witness the inspiration we gain by navigating the human experience with grace, humility, and a healthy dose of mistakes. Because part of being human is being beautifully broken. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Beautifully Broken podcast. I'm your host, Freddie Kimmel, and we have a very special guest with us today, Dr. Anne Shippey. I want to run down some of her education here because it's very impressive. She's a board-certified specialist in internal medicine, certified in functional medicine, a doctorate in medicine from the University of Texas, Master's of Science in Engineering from Polytech Institute, a Bachelor of Science in Chemical Engineering from Washington University in St. Louis, and she's also a published author with Shippey Paleo Essentials and the Mold Toxicity Workbook. Now, reading through her bio, I saw this very interesting passage that sparked my interest, and it's where I want to jump in, and I quote, "I began my career in medicine when the traditional approach and application of allopathic medicine could not solve my own health issues. I was working as an IBM engineer for over a decade when I became so frustrated with my healthcare situation that I decided to leave the field of engineering and attend the University of Texas Medical School." Dr. Shippey, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Now, I think that would be a perfect spot for us to jump in. How did you go from being an engineer at IBM to wanting to go into medical school?
I actually love being an engineer, and I love working for IBM. I got to do things like get chlorofluorocarbons out of the cleaning process, manufacturing process, way ahead of schedule and under budget, and actually ended up saving money. So great projects like that that were really exciting. But I went on vacation, and when I came back, I was never the same again. And this was before the internet. So I think probably what had happened is I picked up a parasite that triggered my celiac disease. And the way that my celiac disease is doesn't get picked up on the traditional tests. So I really had to piece together what was going on at the time and found the power in food and supplements and seeking out multiple modalities. I saw a naturopath and a nutritionist and an allergy specialist. I put together the pieces that I needed to help my gut to heal. And I got so interested in how the body worked that I decided to go to medical school and do medicine differently. I knew that there was a different way that I could have been helped.
Well, that's beautiful. So in this, we'll call it your pain to power scenario, where you were a little bit lost, but you probably used some of those challenges to put yourself back together. What do you think were some of the key pieces of the puzzle for your picture?
The key pieces were really finding the optimal diet for me, the things that weren't going to create inflammation in my body and that allowed it to heal. And then I think I got very nutritionally depleted. I ended up running into people later, you know, after I had left IBM a couple of years later, and they all thought I was dying because I got so skinny. So I think my body just did not have the nutrients to be able to rebuild. So I think taking some supplements that were really helpful there. And then getting my immune system to calm down. So I was just so inflamed. So the supplements and the diet that helped to reverse that inflammation.
Beautiful. You know, one thing that I read in your bio was one of the two books that you're published for, which is one is, it's correct, it's the Mold Toxicity Handbook.
Right.
Beautiful. Now, how did you become an expert on mold?
That was about my fourth health crisis that I went through. I guess a little bit like your story where we keep having to either, I don't know, dodge bullets or recover from bullets, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I had already been practicing medicine for several years and had moved into a functional medicine practice, and I started getting sick again. My hair was falling out. I had so much pain in my body that when my 4-year-old and 8-year-old went to hug me, it was, you know, really uncomfortable. I couldn't wear my heels anymore because my foot hurt so badly. And I was getting neurological symptoms to the point where I could hardly hold a glass or lift up my purse with my right hand. Mm. I was really, you know, kind of back to baseline. I didn't have the answers as to what was making me sick, even though I was the doctor that was, you know, I was the go-to detective doctor for a lot of my patients. I didn't have the training or background to really know all the things that could happen with toxic mold. I had gone to a course about a year before, so I knew a little bit about it, and it had started figuring out, oh, I was missing this in a few of my patients. So had started testing for it and treating a little bit. But what really helped me to figure it out was one of my patients who had been through mold before really just got an intuition that I was a lot sicker than I thought I was. I thought I was covering it up pretty well in my office, but she was like, yeah, no, I can tell you're sick. And I think you have Jutetium. So she actually asked me what time I was getting off work that day and came to my house, walked in for a few minutes, and immediately her body was screaming at her and there was a problem. And she ended up being right. It took me going through multiple types of mold testing in the building to find it. But she was right. There was Jutetium there. And so then that started my whole journey with realizing that the information that was out there on toxic mold was not going to help me to heal. So I had to go back to really my functional medicine principles and my engineering brain and figure out what it was going to take for me to completely heal.
Now, when you say mold, I notice you mentioned, and I'm sure people don't know in the audience, Jutetium. Can we go over how many different types of molds there are in the home and really what people are looking at the ones that are going to act like the real kryptonite to the human body?
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how I would describe Jutetium for a lot of people, is that it is like kryptonite. It takes very little of the kryptonite to make people sick, whereas some of the other types of molds, you might not get sick at all. So there are thousands of different types of mold, and some of them don't make the chemicals that make people sick. They might just be an allergen with the mold spores, but the chemicals that some of these molds make really are very toxic. They can damage DNA, they can damage liver, kidneys, mitochondria, cell membranes, really any part of the body can be injured by some of these different toxins. And we're just now, really in the last 10 to 15 years, being able to start to test for some of those toxins, but we can really only test for a few of them. And we're still figuring out the best techniques to do that. And often the mycotoxin tests might be negative even when there is mold. So if you really think that you have mold, you test your body for the mycotoxins and it's negative, the test just might not be sensitive enough. If you do the test and there are mycotoxins in there, pay attention because it means you've got a mold exposure someplace. There's a lot of discussion around the molds in food, but some of the more recent studies are showing that when it shows up in the test that we can do, that it's generally an environmental exposure coming through the lung and the skin.
So are the mycotoxins, is that a metabolite of the mold?
Is. They're the things that the molds make. And it's so interesting because one of the things that can actually increase the mold's production of the mycotoxins is when certain other molds are around. So they're kind of trying to protect their space and their food. And, yeah. You know, it's kind of how they do warfare with each other is to make some of those metabolites.
Sure. I know, you know, one of my favorite wines in the world and a guest on the podcast was Todd White, who does dry farm wines.
Yes.
And they test their wine from mycotoxins. And, you know, going through chronic illness, that is probably one of the 2 or 3 bottles of wine that I can have a couple glasses of. And even I've pushed it to almost a bottle before and had, I've been pretty good, which is absolutely unheard of for me and what my body's been through.
I think the other thing about the dry farm wines is that they don't have the pesticides in them either. So probably with most wine, you're getting a double whammy with the mycotoxins and the pesticides.
I want to go back to your specific situation, and it was a very specific mold that was your kryptonite. Where was the mold coming from in your home?
It ended up being in the air conditioning system, but we had a hidden water leak. So we were probably getting, we were definitely getting exposure from multiple places in the home and multiple types of mold. So we had had a flashing on the chimney that was just letting a little water in, not enough to show through as it was running down the between the walls, between my son's bedroom and mine. So it was probably that combination between the two leaks.
And, you know, let's look at that for a second. So if the average listener is hearing this and I've had this people say this to me a lot, they said, well, I had mold in my bathroom, but I cleaned it up. You know, they sprayed some Clorox and they got rid of it and it's all okay now. And I'm like, I try to tell them, I'm like, what you're looking for is the mold in your walls, behind your dishwasher, behind your appliances. It's usually the hidden stuff in the walls that we can't see. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes. Most of the time, the mold is growing in a hidden place. You don't even see it. It's exactly where you said, where there's some type of water source or whether there's some outside connection to the building. So it could be the ventilation systems. It can be the windows, the chimneys. My next house will not have a chimney and the windows will have big overhangs so that the outdoor possibilities with the pouring rains that we've been getting in most parts in the country the last few years won't get through the moisture or the vapor barrier. And then I've had just people have crazy things like a little leak in a water drainage system with just a little nail that was put through the wall and then into the pipe. Little breaks in how the shower system was done. So, you know, it's just going into the wall or into the flooring. Dishwashers are notorious. I would never put in an ice maker anymore. I've just heard too many ice maker stories where there's, you know, a little bit of hidden water underneath the wood floors and that causing enough. And then the other thing that you've got to be really careful about is how the drainage is set up around your home. If there's grating that the water can get in around the door, around the foundation, you know, that's just a recipe for disaster. And so, then you really need to control the humidity in most environments, unless you live in Colorado or Arizona. Having the humidity run around 50 or 55% is also just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I've sensed that mold exposure. I have a dehumidifier running, especially in the spring and the summer. Fall and winter are pretty dry, but it's definitely helped the air quality in my apartment greatly. So if people are looking for, so if it's something they can't see, what would you say are your top one or two go-to testing methodologies to try to identify something that's wrong in the home?
So in the home, a lot of the inspectors will do air samples. The unfortunate part of that is that most of the mold spores do not get into the air where they're doing the testing. The most critical molds usually don't send out that many spores and they don't go very far from where the mold is growing. So the most reliable way that I found to test for the mold in a building is to test the dust. And there's a test called an HC45, and we can get the link for ordering that to your users. We've got a handout that's anshipbmd/mold that will have this information and a lot more. So then that's 45 different molds that can be tested for in that test. Oh, wow. And then we can also do, with that same dust sample, we can look for three different mycotoxins. There are a lot more, but a lot of times if there's a mold problem going on, there will be at least evidence of one of the 45 different molds or some of the mycotoxins. And then once you kind of have a general feeling for whether there's an issue, then you can get a really good inspector that's going to do the detective work to find the hidden mold. there are lots of clues that they can look for if they're really good.
Yeah, I know. I had a company called American Leak Detectives come in, and they said we're only going to come to your house when it's raining. And they came in with infrared cameras, and they just started, you know, making a little silent movie of my whole apartment, and just started to see where there were hot spots where water was coming in, and it was really, really informative. Luckily, it was a one major wall, but it was probably a 20-foot section where I was having terrible water damage.
So, but it wasn't enough that you could see it through the paint, right? They could see it with the infrared cameras, but there was no water spots on it over
there. No, there were spots where you could see it, actually. Okay. I had a very, very unfortunate situation where someone had actually hid the mold from me to sell me a home. They had put new drywall over the moldy wall. So it took, you know, 4 or 5 months of that brand new painted drywall to be able to express what was going on behind it. Let's say that.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's yeah, horrible. It was just a very, very unfortunate thing. And I was totally, you know, the home looked dry. I did an inspection. It looked wonderful. There was no signs. Now, having gone through that experience, now I would know what to look for. But before that, you know, if there are no visible signs in the bathroom, it really wasn't something that was on my mind.
So I really think, I mean, that would be for anybody who's listening to this that thinks that that they have had any issues with mold, but or even if they're wanting to do prevention, I would not buy or lease a home without doing the tests that I just mentioned, the HC45 on the dust and the mycotoxin test, because a lot of times it is just hidden. And so you have to find dust. Sometimes you have to like pull out the refrigerator or go over the cabinets or go over the door jams or face the wall board so that you can get enough dust to detect it. But if you're going to make an investment like that, it's really worthwhile spending the $300 to $1,000 to know that you're not going to get sick there.
Yeah, no, it's, I would, I've made friends go out and get this. And they balked at the $600 to $800 of testing or whatever it costs them to have an inspector come in. And I said, this is what you're looking at. This is, and we could go into the stories. And I have talked to so many people across the country being a functional health coach. And mold is one thing that if you want to look at a high price point item to get yourself better, that's probably one of the higher price points because it is so difficult to get out of the body. So I want to transition to that. Let's look at where do we start if we find we've had a toxic mold exposure. Let's focus on toxic mold.
So toxic mold, the most important thing is to get out of the toxic environment. So either, you know, to be someplace temporarily while you're having your place repaired or move if you can. Again, test to make sure that you're not going from the frying pan into the fire and that the new place is good, because it's very, very difficult to get well if you're not in a pretty clean environment, if you've gotten to the point of being pretty, pretty sick. Number two is to really open up the detoxification pathways. There's a lot of talk about using things like cholestyramine and Welchol, which are drugs that are binders. What I find is that most people don't tolerate them, and a lot of people actually get sicker. So I rarely use those with patients, only if they beg me, and then usually they're like, "Oh, well, you were right."
Now, isn't cholestyramine isn't that a component that they used to feed to cattle to pull mold toxins out of them?
Right, and yes, and it's an old cholesterol medication, so it lowers cholesterol as well, but it has a lot of negative side effects. So the best thing that I found is to do a combination of liposomal glutathione and binders. So the binders really vary depending on the person, but they can be charcoal, clay, pectisol, and several other things. But usually there needs to be some combination of those. And we also need a really foundational, healthy diet. So that's why the kind of a modified paleo diet is what I find works the best for most people. So it ends up kind of cutting out a lot of the moldy foods like the grains and the peanuts and those kinds of things. And then adds in a lot of vegetables that really support low inflammation and the detoxification systems, the healthy proteins that you need for building blocks for doing repair. and then some good fats, because the cell membranes really need the good fats to do the repair from the mycotoxin damage. And then most people need some repair of their mitochondria because their mitochondria have been damaged. So mitochondria are the little organelles inside the cell that make energy. And things like CoQ10 and nicotinamide riboside, the vitamins, and then phosphatidylcholine that repair the mitochondria cell membranes as well as the cell membranes. And again, all of this is in the mold handout that we have, the NCHIP-EMD/mold. So that I don't want people to feel overwhelmed and, oh my gosh, I can't capture all this. It's all written down for you.
Beautiful. I can't wait for people to have access to that document. Do you know how exactly that the mold damages the little mitochondria? Because when I envision a cell, and I have a good picture of it, and I've studied actually a little bit of quantum physics and quantum mechanics and looking at that quantum level of the cell. So we've got 200 to 300 little nanomotors. So as I tell people, it's like little turbines spinning within the cell. And is it correct that the mold toxins actually go intracellular, that they get in there?
They do. And one of the most interesting things too is looking at how it can actually sit. Some of the mycotoxins can sit on your DNA and then have it not work, the DNA not express itself appropriately. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a test that I send over to Germany sometimes to see what toxins are sitting on people's genes. And it's been kind of shocking the number of times that we've had a mycotoxin that's, you know, causing, it makes sense, the particular gene that it's sitting on. And one of the most common ones that I see is it's actually sitting on one of the genes that help to do the DNA repair itself. And so then that's a gene that's linked with increased risk for cancer. And so I think part of why we're seeing the increased risk for cancer when people are exposed to mold is multifactorial, but that's definitely a piece where with the genes and the mitochondria, so that the body's ability to repair is being diminished.
Mm. You know, it's, my head's spinning with all the directions we could go with this. But, one thing that I did, aside from diet and supplementation, was I went and saw a mold specialist, and right away she put me on, I'm going to try to get this correct, I think it was amphotericin B. I did a nasal rinse, which was horrendous. And then I also did itraconazole, which was an antifungal. And I found that if I did both of those, the other thing I did was it's called a troche, and it's just something that dissolves in your mouth. It was also a type of amphotericin. But if I did all those three, I found that pretty quickly, a lot of the body pain that I was experiencing would go away. However, the second I stopped those medications, everything kind of came back. So that was a very short-lived solution for me. Do you know, am I a weird case, or is there a reason why?
So she must have found something that made her think that you actually were colonized or infected with the mold. And so that also does happen sometimes where it gets into our sinuses or gut or lungs. And often for those infections to go away, it takes 6 to 12 months of treatment.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just not enough. So, you know, antibiotics, when we give those, generally, you know, we just need to treat for 7 to 14 days and the bacteria is totally wiped. With fungus, because they're so, or in mold, because it's so slow growing to get through enough of the life cycles, and then it's just so insidious and into the tissues, it does take a lot longer treatment. But a lot of times that we can shorten that by, again, making sure that the immune system gets strengthened. So one of the other things that the mycotoxins do is they suppress the immune system. So you're just more likely to get a lot of infections. And in fact, that's a whole Lyme story too, where I think when people are in mold, that Lyme and all the co-infections as well as viruses can have more of a party rather than being, you know, kept in check by the immune system. So a lot of the times when people are infected or colonized with the mold, we need to be really doing things that help to boost the immune system.
Yeah, you know, that's a very common story. And maybe it's because coming from a person who did have such a difficult little road managing chronic illness, but I hear a lot of people that are going through Lyme that discover they have mold, that discover they have heavy metals, that discover they've got all the bad genetics. And it's always like, it seems to be this perfect storm.
Right. Yeah. It's just a lot of times you have these little warning signs that you don't know are building up to falling up the cliff or the perfect storm. Right. So, you know, if you're starting to have migraine or having headaches or skin rashes, feeling more tired, like those are all signs that there's something up, and it's good to get ahead of it before you, you know, have situations like you and I did where we really totally tipped over.
Are there parts of the country that are more prone to having these situations occur in the home?
Certainly. I think Texas is one because we have, I would say, substandard building quality. Mm-hmm. And then it's very humid in a lot of Texas, not all of Texas. So anything, any place like that. And then we have this very extreme weather that happens a few times a year, or we've been having that actually the last few days. But it can really happen anywhere. I was just at a hotel in Phoenix for a conference, and I had to change hotel rooms because I could smell it when I walked in. And that's actually another good point, is that you can't always smell it. Sometimes it's making something called MVOCs, microbial volatile organic compounds, and those are the aspects of the mold that you can actually smell, but you generally can't smell the mycotoxins.
Mm. You know, another component of this is, so we've got the idea that, you know, you can go the route of we can do some type of medication if we've got an active infection. You know, we can obviously do the diet and detoxification, some of the binders you mentioned in the liposomal glutathione, which is the body's major antioxidant. What about something like infrared sauna to help detoxify the body?
Yeah, I call that a multiplier. So infrared sauna can be, especially for people that don't have good, what I'd call drains, like if you think about a bathtub, like the drains, if your drains are kind of clogged up, you know, you're genetically predisposed or your body's just totally overwhelmed and you're not able to drain the toxins optimally, an infrared sauna can be really helpful. People who are pretty sick, though, need to go slow. Just start with like 5 or 10 minutes and then gradually build up. And then anytime you get in a sauna and you have a sense, oh, I need to get out, don't override that or you can get really sick. The other thing that I love is hyperbarics. Mm. Hyperbarics, there's actually really good research behind now that it helps to release and mobilize the toxins and help them get out of your body. So if you have access to a hyperbaric, it can be helpful to detoxify, but then also to increase the stem cell production so that you have more capacity to repair.
Mm. And is there anything else that you'd recommend in that paradigm to try to detoxify the body a little easier?
Yeah, I have a detox bath that I recommend and use that's available on my website. That's amazing. It's a clay and salt and herbal bath. And it's another one of those things for a lot of people that don't detoxify very well. And you can just do it at home. And again, the same kind of thing. Sometimes you have to start out kind of slow because it really does speed up the detox and you don't want to overdo it at first. Start with 5 or 10 mm-hmm. minutes and then work up to longer periods of time. But it uses your skin and to help to get the toxins out.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I did that really, I did not expect this to be a side effect, but probably November, I started using the AMP coil, which is a pulse electromagnetic combined with frequency, combined with bioresonance. And my one big symptom is that whenever I threw away everything in my apartment, gutted, removed the floors, ripped down the walls, furniture, curtains, everything, there was a bedroom that I left alone. And I know it was sealed up, but every time I would go grab a sweatshirt from that bedroom, and this is so crazy, I want really people to hear this. If I would touch a piece of clothing that was exposed by that mold in 2 hours, and you can ask the girl that I was, my girlfriend at the time, I would be in tears. I would be so filled with negative emotions. And I mean this, like, enraged. And it was like the mold, the best thing I can say is the mold took over my head and that I was controlled. I know that sounds crazy. It's going to sound crazy to people listening, but it was real. And it happened at least 5 times where I would grab an old bill, even that was in a folder, at the time that like I hadn't thrown away like a piece of paper. And, you know, I remember being so depressed. I was like, I'm like a freak. And the other weird thing is my teeth right here, they'd go completely numb right in the front of my face. And when I started using Amp Coil, that started to diminish really, really fast. And I have not had that in probably 3 months.
Yeah. So a lot of people, when they're going through the healing process, their immune system's on hyper alert mode. It's like, it's been able to start to relax, like, okay, I'm going to be all right. And then the little bit of exposure, and it makes sense, right? Because if you've had the flu and then you get exposed again, you don't get sick, but that's because your immune system is really able to jump on it, right? So the same kind of thing is happening with the mold, where your body just floods with inflammation with re-exposure to, you know, because the warning sign alert has gone off. So until your body can really heal enough, it's going to keep doing that. But then once you've been well for a while, you're not as reactive. But it sounds like the Amp Coil really sped that along for you. That's really great.
Yeah, no, because I hear people say, and you know, there's a movement called mold avoidance. And that's where people will literally, I've had people come to me and say, I've had a mold exposure. I have a beautiful 6-bedroom house. I'm living in my car. And it's so, and there are other people that can go in their home even after the home's been remediated. So why, it's just that person sensitive to that home, correct?
Right. And what I find a lot of times is that it just hasn't been remediated well enough. So there are two situations that I see. One is chitomium, the kryptonite one. For me, it's so insidious. Like if you look at it under a microscope, it has little hooks.
What?
Little claws. So
no.
It's very difficult to clean off of any surface at all. Like you kind of just brush it off, but then there can still be a little bit, you know, of random spores and things growing places. Mm. So that's number one. Chitomium is very difficult to remediate. Number two is, for the rest of the molds, a lot of times they just haven't been remediated well enough. They're the HERTSME2 guidelines. If I had followed those, I never would have gotten well. Like,
wow.
So it's, I see this over and over again, where maybe they found one source of mold but didn't find the two or three other ones. And so you just, if you're not tolerating a house after remediation, you have to, you know, continue to retest over time and see if there's something that was missed.
Oh my goodness. I can't believe they have hooks.
I know.
That's terrible. Now, does that affect the body's ability to detox that specific mold, that chitonium?
No, because that the mycotoxins are different, but the chitonium mycotoxins are very neurotoxic. So,
wow.
Then you really have to get into really healing the neurological system with a lot of phosphatidylcholine and mitochondrial support.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible. What about fasting? Is the body able to better detoxify if we do some of these? I know extended fasts, you know, I know doctors supervise, but 7, 14, 21 day fasts, that a lot of people do go to these retreats just to try to give the body a chance to flush.
I think very cautious with the fasting, depending on, you know, what your status is. So a lot of these toxins are actually stored in the fat. So if you're releasing a bunch of the toxins by losing weight and your drains aren't open very well, you may just move them around and make yourself more damaged and, you know, sicker. So I think some of the intermittent fasting can be helpful. There's a product called Prolon that does a 5-day fasting mimicking diet that I think is very helpful. But the water fast and juice fast, I think, could end up being detrimental for a lot of people.
Yeah, I often worry about that when it depends on, really depends probably on the person, the state you're in of depletion, whether you're equipped to deal with that.
And I actually think that the fasting mimicking and combining that with the intermittent fasting gets as good or better result than the, you know, the hardcore fasting.
There's actually this, it's so, the synchronicity in this industry is insane. So I was working in New York. There's a biohacking gym in Chelsea called Hacked. And one of the guys who works out there, his name's Bob Troia. His website's Quantified Bob. And he's everything he writes on is a quantifiable process. So one thing, he'll do an EMF mitigation of the home. He'll teach you how to use a tri-field meter, you know, but he has his own version of the fasting mimicking diet broken down in ingredients you can get at Trader Joe's. So one, I love the fasting mimicking diet by Dr. Valter Longo. However, it is about $550. So Bob has this great article where you can hack it. I think it's under like $62. And it's, I met him in New York City, but it was such a trip.
Oh, that is interesting. I do really like I think it's around $200 a month. So it is an investment, but it's the research behind it is so incredible. Mm-hmm. And I just saw some of their new cancer research that's coming out. It's pretty phenomenal.
Wow.
So it's hard to know if apples to apples. So
yes.
And I think 50% of their profits go to some kind of charitable.
You're right. Yeah. I think he donates a big chunk of that money. Yeah, that's great. I didn't know it was that affordable. I think I might have seen it when it was first coming out, and it might have had a different price attached to it. But that's amazing.
I think right now it's a little over 200. But I think they're just doing such tremendous work, and who knows? Maybe we'll even see it covered by insurance one day because it's so compelling what we're seeing as far as cancer, dementia, MS, other autoimmune disorders, diabetes. Like they've got extensive research going on in lots of different areas of medicine.
I wanna go get my fasting mimicking kit right now.
Okay, good.
You know, the other thing I just want to touch on is EMF and electromagnetic frequency in the home. I've done a little bit of reading on this, but I've heard lately that depending on what type of Wi-Fi, RF signaling, and electromagnetic interference you have, that can actually exacerbate the mycotoxins in the home. Have you read anything on that?
I think that that's true. I don't think it's definitive. It's interesting to look at what actually stimulates more mycotoxin production. So again, it depends on what molds are present, like they're warring with each other. Mm-hmm. Smoke and pollution can increase the production and humidity. And then also just like airflow, like air hitting against it. So I do think that mold is really sensitive to its environment. And that's definitely a possibility that in a electrical field that they feel like they're being bombarded or attacked by something, then they're going to become more aggressive. The other thing that's really fascinating is that I do think that, you know, just this is based on patients' observations, is that when people have a buildup of mycotoxins in their body, that they become more sensitive to EMFs. I've had patients like have to stop carrying their cell phone or not be able to work on their computer and things like that. So but once they're detoxified, their cells are rebuilt, then they can go back to more of a normal life.
Great. The last thing I want to go over is, so we know what to do with a home. We know what kind of test to get. We know some of the ways we can get mold out of our body. As I'm going through this list, one thing that comes up for me is cost. And I know what it cost me from probably start to finish. I don't want to say the figure because it's sad. But so what would you tell people to plan for if they discover toxic mold in their home and you know they know this is not a short fix. They're in it for the long haul if they really want to get better.
It's really difficult to predict because different people get better at different rates and different people need different levels of cleanliness. It can really create a lot of stress for the individual and also relationships. You know, when one person is sick and the other person doesn't know they're being affected, although it's been fascinating to, you know, go back and see what the significant other notices once their person is feeling better too, that it was really affecting them as well. But it can be many thousands of dollars, you know, depending on, you know, whether they do need to get rid of everything or whether they can clean things, and then how difficult it is to find the problem. And, you know, honestly, sometimes people are, homes just cannot be remediated. There's things, like I said, if there's Teutonium, they're on pier and beam, if it's a basement that's been leaking multiple times, if they've been in a floodplain and had, the whole infrastructure affected, then it gets to be, what's the trade-off? Is it worth the investment in trying to do the remediation and see if you can be there or not? So it gets very, very complex and so individualized, but it is a huge stressor for many individuals, but you got to figure it out to get better. It's very, very difficult to get better in a moldy building.
And it's just, as we look at this, I'm sure you see this, and maybe you do, maybe you don't, I should ask you this question, but don't you feel like you're seeing more people that are sicker and dealing with more conditions?
I think it's because our overall environment is getting more and more toxic. So these little daily exposures are filling up our barrels, or it's just more than our bodies can deal with. And then something like mold comes along and really tips us over. So it might have not been the original toxins that were building up. Like for me, I know in my chemical engineering days, I got some exposures, from being in a manufacturing environment. As careful as we were, there's still lots of chemicals around. And probably even from school laboratories and the formaldehyde from anatomy class. So a mouthful of amalgam fillings. I love tuna fish. ate tuna all the time.
Yeah, you were winning.
ate tons of rice that probably had a lot of arsenic in it. So it was like little bits here and there. I didn't know how bad aluminum cans were, diet soda. I could go on and on. So it's these little exposures of these continuous chemicals that are just flowing into our bodies and our bodies just not being able to keep up with it, that are causing people to be more and more susceptible to it. And then I think the building quality has gotten worse and worse, and more buildings are molding, like even new homes. Like I'll have people say, oh, my home's only 2 years old. And I'm like, well, mold can even happen during construction. If you had heavy rains or a leak happened and they didn't handle it correctly, you can move in and have an immediate mold exposure. So I really do think it's the latest epidemic in our country to have these big mold exposures.
And is it your belief, and do you see this in your practice, when people do get out of the moldy home, when they do take the necessary steps, that they do get better?
Oh yes. Yeah. Don't settle for anything less. You should feel as good or better than when you actually realize that you're sick from mold. Then do not settle. You should be able to 100% heal once you find all the pieces to the puzzle of what's caused you to be sick. And, sometimes it's pretty straightforward and easy, and other times you just have to keep doing the investigating to figure it out.
Beautiful. Well, Dr. Shippey, so this has been amazing. I always end the show with a couple of questions. One, it's the Beautifully Broken podcast. So, for me, that's about, it's putting these fractured pieces back together when we trip and fall in life. So what does it mean to you to be beautifully broken?
I think the times that I've been broken have been my greatest gifts. Like it's every time that there's been something that I've been broken and, felt hopeless or like there wasn't going to be answers for, it's changed my life in a direction that I could never have even anticipated the blessings in if I hadn't had those experiences. So I'm really grateful for all of them.
That's beautiful. And the last one is, if you could leave, if you can leave our audience with a question, it can be about mold, it can be about functional health or medicine, but if you could just leave them with a question, something they could just maybe spark examination in their lives on what they should be looking for, or a practice they could pick up to just perform better and feel better and be healthier.
So one of the things that I see over and over is people get stuck in what I call the limbic loop. It's the state that we really need when we're in survival, when we're running from the tiger or we're having to move the tribe. But our bodies don't, it's so intelligent that it's happening automatically when it shouldn't be turned on and shouldn't be stuck on. And to really have the optimal health, we have to get out of that loop. So meditating on a daily basis can really help, but I love a device called the Muse. It's a little headband neurofeedback device that you can hook up to an app on your phone, and it can help to retrain your brain to get it out of that survival state so that then you sleep better, you can more choose how to respond to things that happen in your environment rather than being in that emergency, oh my gosh, the sky is falling mode that I think a lot of people are in today.
That's beautiful. Well, it was a pleasure to have you on the show. I hope you'll come back at some point. There are so many things we could talk about. You're so knowledgeable, and I just thank you for being here today.
Thank you, and thanks for your story too, and for really taking this movement forward to help people to avoid having the things that happen to you.
Yeah, we are doing it. We're bringing it forward. We're getting up and we're getting on. Thank you so much. Namaste.
Namaste.
This episode of the Beautifully Broken podcast was brought to you by our lovely sponsor, AmpCoil. Guys, a heartfelt thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's show, if you found yourself moved and inspired, I would ask that your next stop today is to drop a review on iTunes. Nothing helps a movement like sharing, downloading, and spreading this message. You can follow me on Freddy Set Go on all social platforms, and throwing a screenshot and a favorite quote of your episode in your Insta story or on Facebook. That is the extra credit, next level engagement I am manifesting. So like these little ripples in a pond, your action helps connect this inspired information with the people who need it most. Till next time, I'm your host, Freddie Kimmel. This is the Beautifully Broken podcast. Namaste.